All right. Okay, so make sure this is working. Yes, it is. All right, so this is night three of our financial stewardship series. So we're halfway through tonight. We got two more after this. Last week we talked about some ways to improve your budget. We talked about, there's kind of two sides to the budget equation. You can either earn more, you can spend less, and ideally if you're, looking to get out of debt or have a financial goal you're trying to hit, you would strive to do both of those things. But those are kind of the two things that we talked about last week when I gave several different ideas of things you can do to both help earn extra money and to help cut expenses. We'll talk about that a little bit tonight as well. But I challenge everybody to kind of think about something that they could do to increase their own income. So I don't know how many of you guys did that. I don't need hands or anything, but hopefully you guys have been maybe thinking about ways. If you're in a situation where, you feel like you're tight on the budget all the time, or you're behind on things, or you're in debt and trying to get out, or maybe there's a vacation you want to take this summer, but you don't have the money for, hopefully you're able to kind of think through some ideas and ways to earn some extra money. One of the big things that we talked about last week as far as ways to cut expenses, I talked about, not eating out, and I talked about cutting subscriptions and paying cash and those kinds of things. But one of the biggest things that we talked about that we're really going to dive into a lot tonight is just the idea of getting out of debt. And if you didn't have the debt payments, for most people, that would free up, hundreds or maybe even in the thousands of dollars per month out of their budget. And so what an impact that would make on the average American's budget. And so we're going to talk about that quite a bit tonight. I first want to start off with the baby steps. So I put them in your handout with some blanks. So a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, or this specifically, is directly from Dave Ramsey. He has this 7 baby steps is what he calls it. It's the same baby steps since Brenda and I went through it, 15 or 16 years ago. He's been teaching it for, 25 or 30 years now. And he has these 7 baby steps. And so we're going to talk about them. We're going to talk really about the first 3 tonight, and then we'll talk about the other 4 over the next 2 weeks. And so so his 7 baby steps. The first one is a starter emergency fund. So your blank is emergency. And that is to save $1,000. And so what he has come up with, and it makes practical sense, but his thought behind that is if you have, the very first thing you should do is set aside $1,000 before you start trying to get really intense about paying off debt or saving for these, retirement, vacation, those kinds of things. The first thing is just get $1,000, put it in a savings account, or put it in cash in your sock drawer or something like that where it's accessible easily for you that you can use as in case of an emergency. And the reason he does this is there are a couple of reasons. Number one, most of our emergencies that we might encounter, there are some exceptions, but most of them are going to be under $1,000, right? You get a flat tire, that's maybe it's $50 to fix it, or a couple hundred bucks if you have to get a new tire. The battery doesn't start on your, the car doesn't start, the battery's dead, or, there's some, you had to take a couple of days off of work because, you twisted your ankle over the weekend and you didn't get paid for those days. Well, you those kinds of things. There's most emergencies that we're going to run into in just like throughout the course of our life are going to be less than $1,000. And so if you have that $1,000 set aside, in the event that something like that comes up, you don't have to go to a credit card or some other, debt option. And instead you can rely on that $1,000 cushion basically that you've got sitting there. So some of you guys might already have $1,000 or more than that sitting in a savings account, but that's baby step number one. So if you have $1,000, you're past baby step one. If you don't have $1,000, that would be kind of the first step that you would shoot for. The step two is the debt snowball. That's what we're going to talk quite a bit about tonight. That's paying off all of your debt except for your mortgage. If you're renting, obviously you don't have a mortgage, but if you own a home, that would not be included in the debt snowball. So that's where you literally would just, you would take out all the debts you have. Think about, credit cards, think about, payday loans, think about student loans, think about car payments, think about any, you owe a family member some money, whatever the debt is, whatever, money that you owe somebody else. And you would list those things from smallest balance to largest balance. And then you attack the smallest balance one first. And the idea behind that being that you free up that payment. So if you're paying $50 a month to, you know, your smallest credit card and you get that credit card paid off, now you don't have that $50 payment going out to that card. You pay it to the next thing on the list and it snowballs and it builds up more and more. So by the time you get, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 debts in, you know, you've got several hundred dollars in minimum payments from all these things you've been racking up that you can start throwing towards. So, you know, you're able to start throwing more and more at each debt as you go down the list. And I'll break this down as we get a little bit further in. But that's baby step 2. Baby step 3 is to go back to the emergency fund of $1,000 that you had and increase that all the way up to 3 to 6 months of expenses. So you would sit down and look at your budget. Okay, we spend $3,000 a month, or we spend $5,000 a month, or we spend $7,000 a month, or whatever it is that you spend monthly on your, you know, basic necessities and, you know, maybe a few wants. And then you would times that by 3 or 6 or somewhere in that range, and you would strive to have that much money sitting in a savings account somewhere that's fairly liquid. That you probably wouldn't want in cash, because for most people that's going to be, you know, $10,000 to $20,000, something like that. So you may not want that sitting at home in cash, but somewhere where it's accessible in the event that you would need it. And so that's going to be a fully funded emergency fund. And again, we'll hit more on that later. Step number 4 is to invest 15% of your income into retirement. And so once you're all the way out of debt and all those payments are gone and you've got a big cushion of money, you know, $10,000, $15,000 sitting in a savings account, you know, the stress of dealing with daily finances mostly is going to go away. You're on a budget at that point. So now you can start thinking about longer term things. So investing 15% of your income into retirement is baby step 4. Baby step 5, save for kids' college. That's kind of a wide open one. Some people don't have kids. Some people don't want to pay for their kids' college. Some people's kids are grown. So, you know, there's some variance there. How much do you save for kids' college? You know, what if they get scholarships? All these different variables. But baby step 5 is save something for, you know, be intentional about saving something for your kids' college. Obviously, if you have little kids, the more you save early on, the bigger that will get later on. Blynn, did you have a question? You can save for their wedding too, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Baby step 6, pay off your house early. So that would be a huge goal, being able to pay off the debt of the house. That's going to free up for most of us, you know, a large chunk of money. Of course, you still have taxes and insurance and all of those things, but paying off your mortgage gives you a lot of freedom when it comes to your finances. And then baby step 7 is to live and give like no one else, or build wealth and give. Dave Ramsey said it for a long time, live like no one else, so later you can live and give like no one else. And so he talks about sacrificing and living, you know, not exactly how you want to now for a short period of time, so that later on in life you can have some of those things that that you've sacrificed for, and then you get to enjoy those things later on. So build wealth and give, or live and give like no one else. So before we get into kind of the debt snowball and getting into some of those steps more in depth, I wanted to talk about budgeting and how to do a budget. I've talked about finances before in this kind of a setting, but I've never really gone into like how do you actually put a budget together. So I don't want to bore you. So I don't want it to be, you know, too tedious, but I do want to kind of go through like, what does it actually look like to build a budget? And, the way that Dave Ramsey teaches doing budgeting is he calls it a zero-based budget. And so all that means is whatever money you have coming in each month, you spend that money on paper or in a digital payment or however you're going to set up your budget. You spend all of that intentionally ahead of time, every single dollar. So if you're going to make $5,262 a month, which is the example we're going to give because that's the average income in Cass County, take-home pay, $5,262, before the month starts, you would say, each one of these $5,262, I'm going to give each one of them a job to do. I'm going to write down, I'm going to spend every single one of those dollars intentionally on paper before I actually get the money, so that when the money comes in, I know exactly what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to pay this much on this, I'm going to pay this much here, and so you're going to work your way through it. What a zero-based budget does not mean is a zero-balance checking account. So I have heard of people, like when I listen to his podcast and stuff, people will call in and they're like, I did my zero-based budget and, you know, I overdrew my account because this $10 charge came out that I wasn't expecting. And he's like, well, zero-based budget doesn't mean your checking account balance goes all the way down to zero. Like, you spend every dollar in your checking account. It means that you just plan ahead for whatever you're going to be bringing in, and you spend all of that. You want a couple $100 cushion or something like that in your checking account, or maybe a little bit more, depending on, you know, how much variation there is from paycheck to paycheck. If you pay, you know, if you get paid on the first, and that's when your rent or your mortgage comes out, and a car payment and your insurance, and, you know, a bunch of stuff hits at the beginning, you know, by the time the 15th rolls around or whenever your next paycheck is, you know, you might have spent, you know, almost all of that money. So you might want to have a little bit more of a cushion. So that's, you know, kind of based on your personal situation, the ebbs and flows of your monthly checking account. But don't take your checking account balance down to zero just because I'm talking about having a zero-based budget. So that's what that means. So we want to be intentional with each dollar that comes in. So when you make the budget, as you make it, as you're writing out the things, as you're filling in the blanks, you're in control of it. You get to decide. If you're married, you and your spouse get to decide. If you're single, you get to decide on your own. But you're controlling every one of those dollars. You're telling every dollar, okay, I've got this much money coming in. I'm going to pay this much on this. I'm going to pay this. And so you're directing every single dollar that comes in. Once you're done with the budget, and once you've reviewed it, once you've thought about, okay, what else? Is there anything else coming up in April that I think might be, you know, something I don't maybe pay every month? Is there anything else coming up that I can think of that needs to be included? And once it's set, so if you're single, once you decide this is it, everything is on paper, this is everything I'm going to spend this month, or if you're married and you and your spouse both sit down and say, yes, we agree on this budget, you know, you shake hands about it, or you both sign it and saying we're going to only spend this, or whatever you do, once that happens, then you don't control the budget anymore, then the budget controls you. And so you then are locked into, I'm going to do what the budget says, and I'm going to follow the plan that I've laid out. And so it's important to stick with the budget and do what you actually say. Because if you go through the exercise of writing everything down and you're intentional with all the dollars that are coming in and you have a plan, and then the month starts and you just start swiping the card and you start, you know, buying stuff or shopping for things you didn't think of, like, it's not going to work if you don't actually follow through with the plan. And I'm telling you that because my wife and I have done that. We have set a budget and then not followed through with the budget. And then it's like, why do we even go through all this? You know, what's the point of doing all the work if you're not going to follow through on it? So, okay, so I've got this. This is in your handout in full, but it's a little bit small. Hopefully you can all read it. I had to squeeze it all in to fit it on the page. But I'm going to go through section by section so you can see it. So the numbers that I took, when I gave you guys the – yes, it's on the church website under the sermons. It's in a PDF on there. If you want it in Excel so you can type it in, I can send that to you. Send me an email and ask me for it. Yes. Yes. So send me an email to remind me because I'm going to forget to send it to you, but I will send it to you. So the average income in Cass County was $76,924. So after taxes come out, that would leave you with $5,262. Now, you know, that doesn't account for health insurance or 401k or anything else that you have coming out of your paycheck. So it's not going to be exact, but this is the figure that I used for this particular example. So if you had $5,262 coming in, I assumed only one person was working. That's how much your paychecks would be each one. That's what actually hits your bank account. So if that's how much you made, that's how much your paychecks came in at. We want to spend each one of those $5,262 before we start the month. So that's even smaller than I thought. I guess it's a little bit bigger for you guys than it is on the small screen right there. Hopefully you can read it or just look at your paper. I put it all in there too. So I start with tithing. That's off the top for me. So at our house, we do it based on our gross pay. You know, if you do it off your net pay, it's going to be a little bit different, but $641 is not 10% of 5,262, but it is 10% of the gross pay before taxes come out. So $641 off the top for me and my house, that's what we do. So that's what I'm listing up here. Savings, we're going to skip that for now because for this example, I'm assuming that we're done with baby step one. We have $1,000, but we're paying off debt in this scenario. So yours may vary a little bit. The average rent in Cass County is $1,009 per month. So that's what I filled in. Maybe yours is more, maybe it's less, but that is the average for Cass County. And then next you've got the electric bill. All these are just averages. I just pulled up averages in Cass County for all these different bills. These are fairly close to what my bills are, but not exact. Some of them are more, some are less. But just to give you an idea, so 150 on electric, 40 on water and sewer, 108 on gas, cell phone 114, streaming services, the average in America is $46 a month on various different streaming services. Cable and internet average is $76. And then car insurance, that's like super hard to determine what's the average. The average that I was able to find was $59 if you just have liability only and you have an old car, all the way up to $233 a month on average if you had maximum, you know, lowest deductibles and all that. So I just averaged it out and said that's about $150 a month. If you have two cars, that's probably fairly close to what you're paying, give or take. And then I left some blanks there if you have any other bills that you have. Like, we have a quarterly pest control company that comes to our house. You know, so we don't pay that every month, but we pay it quarterly. So we would add maybe a few things on there. You know, there's going to be, like I said, a random bill. If you have Amazon Prime, we have Amazon Prime. They take it out once a year. They take out a chunk for Amazon Prime. So things like that that are maybe not regular monthly bills. But those are things when you're doing a budget, if you don't think about, oh, yeah, Amazon Prime is going to come out this month for $150 or whatever it is, and you're doing a zero-based budget and you've spent every dollar, and now $150 extra dollar bill that you weren't expecting comes out, now you have to account for that. You have to take it from somewhere else so everything else balances out. So you do want to be as intentional as you can be. I will also tell you, I think I told you guys the first night, it takes a few months to get kind of in the rhythm of budgeting. So if you set up the budget and for April, and then April rolls around and you're a week and a half in and some bill comes out you didn't expect and it messes everything up, it's okay. You know, like, you don't have to freak out about it. It doesn't mean that you are terrible at budgeting or that you'll never figure it out. It just takes a little bit of time because maybe you haven't been looking that closely at your checking account. Most people don't. And so you're not maybe fully ready for all the different bills that are going to come out, or you're not thinking about, I think I shared in here, like, my kids will come home and, hey, so-and-so has a birthday party this weekend. And I'm like, well, I didn't even know about that till today, you know, and how am I going to plan for that? And I do have one idea for you here in the budget, but some things are just going to come up, you know, something's going to happen. And so we need to be ready for those things. And at that point, you would just, if you hadn't planned on it and you're still learning how to do it, you would adjust the budget. Okay, well, I'm not going to be able to put as much in savings, or I'm not going to be able to put quite as much on this debt as I was planning on this month. I'm still going to pay the minimum and a little bit extra, but I'm not going to be able to put all of what I thought I was going to be able to put on there because of this thing that I forgot about. And now I'm going to remember for next time. That bill comes out every year, so I should write this down so I remember next year when this month rolls around that that bill is going to be coming out again. So there's some extra lines on there for that. And then it's total up at the bottom you've spent just on kind of the necessities, although I would say streaming is probably not a necessity. So, but, you know, roughly those are necessities, regular bills. That's $2,334. So you spent almost half of your income on those things. And then the next column, the middle column, I put in debts, and this is another one of those things that could vary widely, right? It could be, you know, hundreds of dollars different for you. But average car payment on a used vehicle in America is $532. Is that what I put? Yeah, $532. I can't hardly read it myself. $532, that's the average on a used vehicle. New vehicles is like $738 on an average monthly car payment in the U.S. right now. And I think that's on an 84-month payment, which is like when we used to borrow for cars, it was like 48 months or maybe 60 months was like the most you could even get. Then it went to 72 when I was working in banking. It got up to 72. Now you can do 84 months, I mean, on a car payment. And it's still a $700 payment because it's just getting out of control. So anyway, so I went with 532 if you had a car payment. That was the average. And then the average credit card, this is total payments. $363 per month. Most people have, you know, multiple cards with multiple various amounts of debt and various different minimum payments, but that's kind of the average total that they pay on credit cards. I did not include student loans. I didn't include personal loans or, you know, payments back to family members or home equity loans. I didn't include any of that kind of stuff just for simplicity's sake and just to not really, really bore you with averages on everything. Just to kind of make it simple, I just put these two in there. So at the bottom of that column, that's about $900. It's $895 going out on those debts. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, the question on the audio, in case anybody's listening, is do you do, which I don't think I repeated anybody else's question, sorry. Does Dave Ramsey recommend doing like level pay for utilities if you can't do it? That's what I do at my house. I don't know that I've ever heard him specifically mention it. For us, it just makes it easier. It's the same payment every single month. It adjusts once a year, you know, when they review it or whatever. So I have that on mine to make it simpler, because, I mean, you could go from, you know, a $70 bill in the wintertime on your electric to $250 or $300 bill or more in the summertime. And so there's just to keep from the variance. That's, I do have mine on level pay. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay. So we got done with the debts. The third column on there, I combined them, cash and savings. So my family, most of the time, the last couple months we did switch from this, but most of the time we do cash, and like for years and years and years we've done cash for groceries, cash for eating out, cash for, we don't do cash for gas, we do cash for, like her and I each have a little bit of spending money each month. So we do cash for a few things just because it you can't overspend on cash. So if you have cash and once you've used it all up, you can't spend any more in that category. Or you got to steal from another category after you talk to your spouse and say, hey, we don't have any eating out money left, but it's, you know, we only have a couple days left and we got a little bit left in grocery. Let's go get, you know, pizza or whatever and let's do that instead. And as long as you're in agreement with it, you know, you can kind of maneuver that money around a little bit. But we try to do cash for groceries. Now one of the reasons, the main reason we switched, is because I told you guys we do more like, grocery pickup. You know, you order like Walmart pickup or something like that. You don't pay cash for that. They take it out of your checking account. So it was getting really annoying. When I worked at the bank, it was fine because Brenda would just send me to work with, hey, here's $100 cash. I bought groceries and I would deposit it while I was there. It was not that big of a deal. Now it's like, I don't want to stop at the bank like seven times a month to deposit $12 because, you know, we bought, you know, a gallon of milk and something at the store and now I got to deposit. So we switched to where now we are doing the debit card. I told you guys we use every dollar, which is Dave's like budgeting tool. So we both have it on our phones. And it tracks, like it connects to our bank account. The transactions come in and you just drag and drop it to wherever it needs to go. So that's how I personally do it now. But for years and years and years, we did cash, especially when I worked at the bank, when it was kind of convenient to make those deposits, in the event we bought something that we couldn't pay cash for. So, anyway, so the average, again, averages on groceries, was kind of all over the place, but, it said on average for a single person, somewhere around $350 per month. For a couple, it was around $700. For a family of four, the average was about $1,000. And, for the Barnes family, they would spend the rest of this column on their grocery budget for their large family. Brady always takes the opportunity to share how big his family is, so I don't want to make him feel left out. So for our example in this, I put $800. We have some single people, we have some couples, we have people with kids, we have people with no kids. So on average for this group, I said about $800, for groceries. Eating out, that varies wildly also. If you go to McDonald's with your family of four and you get out of there for less than like $40, you're doing pretty good. So, you know, or if you go sit down at a restaurant, for the marriage conference, we don't usually go out to eat and sit down at a restaurant, but the marriage conference was a couple weekends ago. We went out two different times and it was like $50-$60 to go sit down just the two of us and eat, you know, just a regular dinner. And so, so it's going to vary quite a bit, but, the average that I found was, for a single person was $200, couple was $350, and a family was $500, on eating out. So that's anything from fast food to sit down to whatever, per month. And so I put $200 in here because, I'm kind of conservative. $500 a month is, that's a lot to spend on eating out. Even with a family, that's quite a bit. So, I put in $200 for this as a conservative example. Depending on what baby step you're in. So like if you're on baby step 1, 2, or 3, Dave Ramsey recommends, he calls it gazelle intense, be gazelle intense. And he shares, you know, a story of like, you know, if you ever watch a video of a gazelle that's getting hunted by a cheetah or something in the Serengeti or wherever they are. And, you know, once it spots the cheetah, you know, it is running with everything it has to get away. And so he likens that to how we should behave financially when we're in a position where we're in debt or we don't have an emergency fund and, we should be, you know, running away from debt and running away, to safety, you know, safety and a little bit of a cushion, in our life. And so he recommends being gazelle intense through baby steps 1, 2, and 3. And so he says a lot of times when it comes to eating out, if you ever listen to his radio show, he says, you shouldn't see the inside of a restaurant unless you're working there. And so, you know, just meaning, you know, if you're going to get an extra job and you want to go work as a server somewhere or something like that, that's great. You can see the inside of a restaurant. But if you are in debt, you shouldn't be going out to eat. You know, save money, eat at home, et cetera. So I'm a little bit more loose than he is on that. But I will tell you, most months still, we are out of debt and we do have 3 to 6 months of savings. And we still budget $200 most months for eating out for our family of four. If we have like the marriage conference, we did budget more for that because we knew we were going to be eating out. But most of the time it's $200 or $250 for our family. So you can do whatever you want, but this is kind of a conservative number. Gas, depends on how far you drive. Depends on how, you know, do one of you work? Do both of you work? You know, does your car, do you drive a truck? Do you drive a hybrid? You know, whatever. There's a lot of variations, but around $300. Now, I know gas prices are going up. But I put $300 as an average. That's roughly what Brenda and I spend. Of course, I have a really short commute. She has a little bit longer one. But on average, we're somewhere around the $300 category. So I plugged that in for this example. Kids, over the years, we've done various different things for kids. But if, just to kind of consolidate everything into one category, you know, your kids have school pictures. If your kids go to Harrisonville, they came home probably this week telling you that they had pictures. So I don't know if you buy those or not. Sports stuff is coming up, you know, spring baseball, football season's coming up soon, basketball, whatever the sport is, you know, there's always fees to do that. Of course, when they do a sport, then they have to have the cleats or whatever kind of shoes they need. They need a certain kind of hat and a jersey and a mouth guard and a, you know, there's all these different things. If you have a kid that's in diapers or formula, you know, that would fall into this category probably. There's all kinds of things. When you have a kid, there's just stuff. There's just expenses that come up. For this example, I put it in as total. Per kid, you could easily spend $100 per kid. This is just an example, just to kind of give us a figure to start with. But you could easily spend $100 per kid, yeah, for sure, or more. So anyway, so I plugged in $100. That's going to vary, of course, depending on what they're doing and things. And then, so the last or the next one underneath that, we've called it blow money for the whole time we've been doing this. That's just kind of a slush fund of money. We've done anywhere from $0 to, you know, $150, something like that in that range, in our own personal budget. And that's one of the ways to kind of catch those. Oh, my friend has a birthday party and they didn't tell, you know, I didn't know about that when I made the budget. And now we got to buy them a gift or, you know, whatever. We got to get to this party or they're going to go to, you know, they're going to go somewhere for the birthday party to Sky Zone or something. You know, your kid's going to want a drink while they're there or whatever. And so, you know, $50 is not a lot to catch, but it can kind of catch some of those little things that maybe you forget to budget for or you can't budget for because you didn't even know it was going to be coming up, until you're already into the budget. So, that could be easily higher than $50, but for this example, I put $50. Just to kind of give you a little bit of a slush fund. That could also be, you know, you get to the end of the month and, you know, you're out of grocery money, but you need, you know, a gallon of milk or, you need a couple little things to get you through. And, you have this blow money or this slush fund category, where you've got some money left in. So it's just kind of a catch-all for extra stuff. And then the rest of those are going to be things, couple of those. So like the property taxes, I told you guys from my wife and I for the last several years, we've tried to, budget monthly for property taxes. It could be, you know, depending on the kind of cars you have and all that, it could be less than that or more than that. But those are due every year, right? Every December, you got to pay that. Or you can't title your car or you can't, you get penalized and stuff. And so if you take whatever you paid last year, divide it by 12, you know, and average it out. The reason I put 200 is because we're already 4 months into the year. So like if you're just making a budget for the first time and you haven't been putting aside money each month, you only have 8 months left to catch that up for the rest of the year. And so, I figured it based on that. So to, you know, put that, so we put cash like in a drawer, for us personally. And then at the end of the year, we go deposit it and make that payment. You can set it aside in a savings account. If you're really nerdy about it, you can set it aside like in your checking account. You can just leave it in there. And if you keep a spreadsheet or something of all the balances that are in your checking account, that gets to be pretty tedious. I'm pretty nerdy about finances, but I don't go that far. But if you want to do that, you can. Just some way that you're like setting aside money for that expense that you know is going to be due at the end of the year, and you don't want to wait till the end of the year and you have a $500 or $1,000 bill or whatever. And so set that money aside monthly. What do we got next? We got car repairs. All of us who have cars know that it doesn't matter if it's brand new or if it's super old. There's going to be stuff that goes out on it. You're going to need to get a new tire every once in a while. You're going to need to get a new battery every few years. You're going to need to get windshield wiper blades. And you're going to have to, you know, get an oil change done. And there's just going to be things that come up. And so there's been various times when we've been budgeting where we've actually put money in an envelope. And then sometimes we just think, okay, we'll just absorb it into our budget because we have some extra this month. And so we don't, you know, necessarily set it aside in cash. So it's gone back and forth, like in our own personal situation. But right now we are putting cash in an envelope for car repairs. And so they're just going to come up. I mean, there's nothing you can do to really avoid it. Some are going to be more expensive. You know, an alternator goes out or even something more serious. And you got a $1,000 car repair bill. If you just start setting aside systematically $50, $100 a month, $75 in this example, and you let that money build up over a few months, it'll get you through, you know, a situation that may come up, especially if you know your car, you know, 6 months from now, I'm going to have to, you know, do some kind of a big maintenance on it. And, you can kind of prepare for that. If you haven't been setting aside money for that, that's what the emergency fund is for. I already mentioned that, flat tires and batteries and things. But if you can get ahead of it and you can set aside money, then you don't actually have to touch that emergency fund. And that's even better because then that money just sits there for you and puts a little bit of a cushion between you and life. And so, putting aside some money for that is a really good way to do that. Car replacement. So, I told you guys this is something that we do. I've got a savings account. I just have an automatic transfer set up. $300 a month goes out, goes into the savings account, because eventually we're going to have to replace a car. And we don't borrow money for cars. My wife and I don't. And so when that time comes, if I've been putting $300 a month away and I do that for 3 years, you know, that's going to be over $10,000 plus whatever I can get for the car I have at the time. You know, I might be able to get a $10,000 or $12,000 or $13,000 car, and I can pay for it in cash at that point. And so, so it's a good idea if you want to get out of the cycle of borrowing debt or borrowing, on cars and things like that, you have to do it another way. And so really the only other way is to save it up systematically. Most of us can't just absorb a $10,000 car purchase, you know, in a given month or with a really short amount of notice. Most of us are going to need kind of a bigger on-ramp to prepare for that. And so, for us, we just have an automatic transfer every month out of our checking account into a savings account that's just for replacing a car. And so for this example, I put $200 in there. I will tell you, if you're going to cut the budget and because you're trying to get out of debt or something, this would probably be the first category I would cut. I'm not setting aside money for a car that I need to get 3 years from now while I'm paying a bunch of interest on this debt that I have hovering over my head. So so this is, again, assuming that you're, you know, not in a bunch of debt, but this is just an example. And so if you find yourself in debt and you're trying to get out, don't be setting aside money for car replacement. Now, car repair, that's, you know, your car is still going to break down. You're still going to need something. So it'd be okay to keep setting aside a little bit of money for a car repair. But you don't need to be trying to set aside money to replace your car, while you've got all this debt hanging over your head. That's one place I would cut. Life insurance. I will talk about that on the last week. But if you don't have life insurance, for most of us in this room, you should have life insurance. If you have somebody that depends on what you do to earn income in your household, you should have life insurance. So, like, I have life insurance. Brenda has life insurance. We each have roughly 10 times our income on each of us. And so whatever you make per year times that by 10, that's about how much you should get. So if you're the average person, you make $76,000, you should have roughly a $760,000 life insurance policy. And depending on your age and health and all that, you can get, I mean, $750,000 coverage for, you know, $30 or $40 a month, depending on your age and health concerns and your family history. And there's, you know, there's other variables, but it's really not that expensive. I'm not in that great of a shape, and I was able to get 10 times my income for, I think it's $62 per month. So it's really not that expensive. And I'll talk more about it as we get further on. I think the last week we'll talk about that a little bit more. But if you don't have life insurance, you should get it. I put $35 in there. And then project. I like to do stuff around my house. It seems like every house we've ever bought, we want to overhaul the backyard. We want to put in a new deck. We want to fix this thing. We want to upgrade the light fixtures. We want to, you know, refinish the floors. We want to do something all the time. I'm hoping once we get into our new house, we don't have any projects for a little while, but I'm sure we'll find something to do. But the reason I put $73 there is because that's exactly how much was left. And so I put it in that last line item. So if there's a particular project that you want to do around your house or there's a vacation you want to take, you can call project whatever you want. But that was where the extra money that I had left over as I was doing the math on the budget, that's what was left. And so if you want to do a big house project, again, we don't borrow money at my house, so I can't put it on a credit card. I can't go borrow, take a personal loan out so I can redo something in my house. I have to save up for it. And so that's how we do it. That's how we do our vacations and all of that. So so this is just a sample line-by-line item. No one's budget is going to look exactly like this one. My budget does not look exactly like this one. But it's just to kind of give you an idea how you would systematically go through, fill out all the lines, spend every single dollar. So if you add up those three numbers at the bottom, that would add up to $5,262. And that's how you would spend it on paper before the month starts. So does anybody have any questions about that before I move on? It's fairly basic, and I sometimes will say, oh, it's easy. We all just kind of get how to budget. But sometimes I think not all of us really get how to budget. So I think it's nice to just look at it. Yes, Bobby. I'm assuming a lot with that budget. Because it's so, the question was, am I assuming that health insurance is provided by the employer? Some employers do provide it. My assumption was just, I don't know how much people pay for. Everyone's health insurance is going to be very different. Some people don't have it through their employer at all. They pay for it after the fact. But yes, you do need to budget for it somewhere. So yeah, so if it's not taken out of your paycheck or provided by your employer, you would need to purchase it on, you know, secondhand. There's Medicare and stuff like that that's available also. So there's a lot of variables there. So, yes, you definitely need life or not life. You definitely need health insurance, no matter what, because yeah, you get hit with, No, I would not call health insurance a debt. Yeah. Depending on how you pay for it. So for most people in this room, it would take off of your paycheck amount at the top of the page. So instead of bringing home $2,631 per paycheck, you might bring home $2,500 because your pay premiums is $130 a month. That's or a pair paycheck. That's an example. Some people pay, you know, $600 or $700 a month for their health insurance. Some people pay more than that if you buy it aftermarket, or I don't know if it's called aftermarket, whatever. Not through your employer marketplace, yeah. So it varies a lot. But yeah, you need health insurance, and I wouldn't consider it a debt. Now if you have like medical debt, that would be a debt that I would consider. But health insurance itself, like your monthly premiums, I would not consider that a debt. Okay, so at this point, you've spent everything on paper. So maybe you're the nerdy spouse that I mentioned at the first week. So if you're the spouse who likes doing this kind of stuff, this would be kind of the legwork that you would do on the front end. You would sit down and you would write all this out or put it all in a spreadsheet or however you're going to do it. And then you would go to your spouse and you would say, here's what I think we should do. We're going to make $5,262. This is how I think we should spend it. What do you think? Change something. Tell me that this is too much or too little. So like in my house, I don't do hardly any of the grocery shopping. So when it comes to groceries, I don't know exactly how much to budget. If I'm just starting out, I don't know exactly how much to budget. Now I know how much we spend because I do the budget, but if I wasn't doing any budgeting, I'd have to go to Brenda and say, listen, how much do you think you're going to spend on groceries this month? How much did we spend last month? Let's go in and investigate that. And because I might say we need $500 because I'm living in 2010. And I'm thinking we can live on $500 in groceries. And she's like, have you been to the grocery store? And I'm like, no, I haven't been. And she's like, well, $500 isn't going to get very far. We could spend that, you know, one trip to Sam's Club and you might be out all of your budget for the month. And so she might say, this is way too little. And I'm going to be like, okay, well, where are we going to take it from? And she's going to say, well, why are you putting project money away? We don't need to do any projects around the house because we got to buy food or whatever. You know, like you're going to work together on the budget and you're going to go back and forth and you're going to, land on a budget that you both agree on. So, maybe you like to stop at the gas station on the way to work every morning and, you know, spend $10 a day on whatever, cigarettes or energy drinks or coffee or taquitos or whatever the thing is you buy at the gas station every morning. Well, that adds up. So is there a way maybe we could cut some of that out, the spouse might say, and put it here instead, pay on this debt, or I would feel better if the kids had diapers this month instead of you having cigarettes this month. Could we maybe, you know, split the difference a little bit here or something, right? So if you're the spouse who's the nerdy one, you're going to make it all, you know, what you think it should be. And then you're going to go to the other spouse and you're going to say, what do you think about this? And let's come to an agreement. And once we've argued about it, once we've, you know, fought for our thing and you fought for your thing and we all, you know, we come to an agreement, we say, okay, we're going to edit whatever we need to edit. And once we have it all done, this is going to be what we land on and this is what we're going to stick to. And if one of us needs to go outside of what we've written down on the budget, we need to talk about it before you buy something that's going to go over the budget that we didn't budget for, so we can readjust it or reevaluate if that's something that we need to purchase at that particular time. If you're single, it's going to be easier and harder. It's going to be easier because you don't have to convince somebody else of why we should spend it this way. You just sit down and you do it and you say, this looks good to me. I think I'm going to roll with this. But it's more difficult because there's not anybody there checking you to make sure like that you're not overspending. So you're going to have to kind of do that yourself, or maybe you have a close friend or family member that you can talk to and say, hey, if I just give you my budget, will you just, will you just look at it and tell me if this is too crazy, or make sure that I kind of stick to this? Will you kind of like help, you know, maybe don't show them your budget because you don't want them to know how much you make or how much you spend, but maybe just say, you know, hey, will you text me like once a week and just ask me how my budget's going or something to like remind me that I need to stick with this? Because spouses, we have kind of a, if you're working together with your spouse, you kind of have a natural built-in like person checking you, like, hey, you spent this and it wasn't in the budget. You know, we can remind each other of that. Whereas if you're a single person, maybe you don't have that. And so it might be helpful to have that kind of a person, unless you're just super disciplined, in which case, you know, lucky for you, good for you. And hopefully it works and you can stick with it. But, okay. So let's see where we're at. Oh, this is the slide I was supposed to advance to. And I told myself in my notes, but I didn't advance to it. So this is just the top of the page. So your goal on that balance is to work until that's zero. So in the spreadsheet that I have where it calculates it for you, you can, you know, add things, adjust things, subtract things, and you're working until that number gets down to zero. That's the zero base budget. Again, not a zero checking account balance, but a zero base budget, spending all the money on paper before the month starts. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question is, how would we, with a deductible, like on your health insurance, if you have a deductible on your health insurance, most all of us have deductibles, how do you budget for that, or where do you put that? If you have a health savings account through your job, if you have like the high deductible premium plan, you can get a health insurance or HSA health savings account with a card. So you can budget, you know, per paycheck I want, you know, let's say your deductible is $5,000 per year. If you're in a situation where you can break that out into, you know, equal payments over the course of the year for your check, so like, I don't know how many that would break down to if you got paid twice a month, but it'd be something like, was that $200 per paycheck? Give or take, it'd be about $200 a paycheck. If you have that kind of a margin in your budget where you can say, tell your boss or your employer, just take $200 out, put it on this health savings card, and that way by the end of the year, if you haven't used any of it at all, or as you use it throughout the year, you have your whole deductible on that card. If you don't have that option, or you don't have the cushion, you know, in your budget for that, you could just put it in a savings account and kind of build it up throughout the year. I found a lot that, I mean, like when my kids were younger, I feel like we had more health costs. Like, you know, a trip to the emergency room is like $2,000, you know, out of pocket, even if you have insurance. We've been fortunate that over the last maybe 5 years, I don't know that we've really had anything other than doctor visits and stuff like that. So, or maybe an urgent care here and there because they're sick. So you don't know if you're going to spend all of it or not. But you can, I mean, or you could say, I'd like to have my $5,000 deductible by the end of next year. So I'll have 2 years to kind of build up. I'll do $100 per paycheck and have it go onto the card. And then if you need to spend it, you spend it. And if you don't need to spend it, then it builds up and goes on there. But if you have the option of an HSA, the nice thing about that is that it comes out before taxes. So if you put $100 onto your HSA per paycheck, if you brought that home, you'd have to have like $125 bring home money to be able to equal the same as what the $100 pre-tax, would be, because you got to pay taxes on it. So, if you have the HSA option, that's a good option. Or they have the FSA, the Flex Spending Account, which is similar but not exactly the same. It rolls over from year to year. Or I guess, or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe the health savings rolls over and the flex spending doesn't. But either way, if you have that as an option, that's a good way to do it. Otherwise, yeah, you can't just do a savings account. And on that, I would probably look back, like, at the last year and see what you've spent on, like, out-of-pocket on health expenses, and then maybe try to divide that by 12 and just say, okay, this we spend on average, we spend $600 out-of-pocket. That's $50 a month. Let's put that in a savings account. Or we spend $5,000 a year, so we're going to try and put more in there to accommodate for those so you don't have debt going on it later, but you kind of are preparing for it as it goes. So. That's your max out of pocket, or that's your deductible? Okay. Okay. There's a lot of other variables. It would depend kind of on what's your debt situation, what other savings do you have, if any, like, so there's a lot of variables there. I would say it is a priority to have some money set aside in the event that your kid goes to the emergency room. I will also say if your kid goes to the emergency room, you know, the hospitals in the United States, they treat you regardless of whether or not you can pay upfront for it. So if you're going to go into debt, that is one that that's not something that, like, you've overspent. Like, I want to get a new car, and so I'm just going to go buy it. It's like my kid was needing medical treatment, and I had to do it. I personally would try everything I could to stay out of that kind of debt as well. But like Lincoln, when he was about 18 months old, he had an infection behind his ear. We took him to the hospital, and he was admitted. We were there for, like, 6 days. They did surgery. It was like a $50,000 or $60,000 bill, I think, something like that. Yeah. And so we had an $8,000 out-of-pocket maximum that we had to hit, and then the insurance took care of the rest of it. Well, I didn't have $8,000, so we made payments. You know, we had to go to an HSA each month, and then we paid the hospital directly off of that for, like, a couple years or something like that, because it was, we didn't have it, and we had to get the treatment done. And so, as far as debt goes, medical debt is one of those that you can't really, you can avoid it if you have money saved up, but it's difficult to, like, budget for, because it could be, like I said, we've gone years with no expenses. But my kid could get hurt tomorrow, and now I've got thousands of dollars in medical bills that I wasn't expecting. So if you have such a high, if it's $15,000, if that's what you have, is that what you have to pay before they get to any coverage? That sounds really high. That might be like the maximum out-of-pocket that you pay, and then they cover everything else after that. Either way, let's say it's $15,000. Yeah, I would try to, like, over the next few years, try to systematically get to a point where you have that money set aside in case it happens. If you don't have an HSA, then yeah, I'd probably just put it in a savings account. But it's going to take you a while to build up $15,000, especially if they're getting hurt and you're using it along the way, you know, then that just keeps knocking you back. But yeah, so that's a good question. Okay. Debt snowball. Let me see where I'm at. Okay. So, when we started Dave Ramsey, I believe we had one credit card with a couple $1,000 balance on it, and we had a car that we had a payment of, I think it was, we owed probably like $10,000 or $12,000 on it, something like that. So we didn't have a lot of individual debts. We had two, and we were able to pay off the first one, you know, within a month or two of starting it. And then after that, we just had the one debt. And so we personally did not really use the debt snowball because we didn't have a bunch of little debts that we could kind of pile up. But if you have multiple different debts, so I just listed an example here. Of a person that maybe had, this is $32,600, I think, is the total of the debt, and split up over those various different ways you can see, and those are the minimum payments. So maybe that looks something like what you have, maybe it doesn't. But the idea of the debt snowball is that, you would pay off the lowest balance one first, you take that $20 that you had been, forced to pay as the minimum payment, you roll that to the next one, and then you'd have, you know, $43 plus whatever else you can squeeze out of your budget, until you get the $750 paid off. And then you'd roll, you know, that money into the next debt or into the next payment. And so it kind of picks up some steam as you keep going. I will tell you, so you list them smallest to largest by balance, not by minimum payments, not by interest rate, but by balance. And the reason that he has you do that is, this is Dave Ramsey's method here, but the reason he has you do that is because if you get the small victories, most of us could pay off a $250 bill. If we really tried, we could pay it off in a month, right? If we just cut our expenses way back, or we, you know, worked an extra job one weekend or something, we could probably pay off $250 pretty quickly. And so you get that small win, and it's like, okay, I made some progress. I can see that I'm moving in the right direction. Whereas if you started with, let's say the $1,600 credit card had the highest interest rate, and you think, well, I want to get rid of the interest rate first because it's going to charge me more. It may take you a few months to get that $1,600 bill paid off. And, you know, 3 months into it, you might be like, this is not working. I'm not seeing any progress. I still have all these bills. I'm not making up any ground. And so, especially once you get into the car payment, that's going to be a bit of a slog to pay off $22,000. And so you kind of lose, excitement over it. And so you tend to fade and not do it, not follow all the way through, if you don't do it smallest to largest. And so that's the main reason that he does it that way. And people will argue, if you ever listen to his show or his podcast, people will call in and say, well, I think I should pay off the highest interest from the first because it's going to save me the most amount of money. That is true mathematically, that it will save you more money if you follow through and do it all by paying off the highest interest rate one first. But the problem is that most people won't finish it. And so, they don't end up getting out of debt at all, because they've focused on a larger balance one to get the interest paid off. And I'm going to show you too that the interest is really kind of a small portion of the problem anyways. So this is month one. So if we're saying April is month one for this, particular, example, this is a sample of what you'd have. So you would pay, so in April for us, let's say you were able to, so for this example, I said, I told you guys I've driven Uber Eats off and on for the last 4 years. On average, I make about $22 an hour driving Uber Eats. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, but approximately $22 an hour. So, if you worked 5 hour shift and you did that twice a week, so, maybe you work all day, you work a 10 hour shift on Saturday, or you break it up and you work two different evenings. I don't know. I just figured if I worked 5 hours, two nights a week and making $22 an hour, that'd be $880 I could add to my budget each month. Everyone tracking with that, that'd be $220 per week. If I work 10 hours at $22 an hour, that's $220 a week. So I'd have $880 extra per month. Now that's not accumulating taxes and stuff, but, just for easy numbers sake, if I could earn an extra $880 per month, and I knew I had this debt and I'm really trying hard to get out of debt. So I earned the $880. I cut my budget a little bit. I squeeze out, $100 here or $50 there. I cut out that $200, car replacement fund I was telling you about earlier. I could probably, in this scenario, pay $1,000 month one. $880 plus a little bit I can cut from my budget. I could pay $1,000. Well, that knocks out the first two cards on this list, right? So month one, you could pay off credit card one, credit card two. So now you've got the $20 payment and the $23 payment. So you got $43. You roll it into the third payment. So 43 and 48 is 91. Yeah, $91. And so you roll, so now you're paying $91 plus, if you're still working, you're still earning $880 a month, driving Uber Eats or doing some other side job, and you pay $1,000 again the next month. Now you've got, you've paid $1,093. Maybe I did my math wrong. $93. Now the balance from $1,600 is down to $482. I added some interest in there because you're going to have interest on the cards. So 2 months into it, you've paid off in full two whole credit cards and you're almost done with the third one, right? And I'm not going to go through all the months on this because it would take us a while. Whoops. But I did the math. I went through and I added interest and I did the math on it, and it would take 21 months to pay off all this debt. If you did $1,093, and then you rolled it in, so when you're paying the student loan payment, now you're paying $1,293 a month. And then by the time you get to the car, it's whatever $1,293 plus $450 is, $1,700 or something like that. So is everyone tracking? I'm throwing out a lot of numbers. I tried to put it on the screen to help. In my mind, it all makes sense. Hopefully it makes sense for you. But as you roll those payments in, 21 months in, so just over a year and a half, a little less than 2 years, in this scenario, you pay off $32,600 and completely out of debt. Okay. If you're in $32,000 worth of debt, and you can pay it off in 21 months, the interest that you're going to accumulate over 21 months on $32,000, even if it's at like credit card interest rates, is not going to be a huge amount of money. It's going to be hundreds of dollars, not tens of thousands of dollars. And so that's why the the debt snowball, the rolling of those payments together, the working extra, the cutting expenses, all of those things combine to be able to advance the goal more quickly. 21 months is pretty fast to get out of $32,000 in debt. And especially on that car payment, you probably were going to be paying for 5 or 6 years on that, right? So be able to cut it all down and be out of debt completely in my scenario in 21 months. And that's only working 2 nights a week extra in addition to your job. I mean, there have been weeks where I've worked 7 nights a week plus my regular job, if I'm really working for a specific goal. Now for me, it's usually not, and it has not been getting out of debt, but it's been, like I said, saving up for a house or going on a vacation or things like that, where I would maybe work a lot extra, for a short period of time. So again, like I talked about last week in earning more or cutting expenses, it's not about, okay, this is going to be a new lifestyle for us. I'm just going to work as much as I can and not spend time at home with my family. That's not the goal at all. Or I'm not going to cut my expenses back where I never get to do anything fun for the rest of my life, because that's not any way to live. But for a 21-month span, if you're in this example and you got $32,000 of debt, and you could see a swing where now in less than 2 years, I've paid off all my debt. I don't have any. Now you've got, you know, even just the minimum payments that you're paying before, you got almost $700 in money freed up. So you could quit the extra job and you have a $700 cushion in your budget and you're not paying out all these debts. You lose the stress of having that debt hanging around. There's not as much risk on your life. If you're working and you get injured and you can't work for a couple weeks, or like Joelle, where she's not able to work, you have a lot of extra peace about, okay, I don't have all these bills. I do have, you know, you're still going to have your regular expenses. You're still going to have to eat, keep the lights on, all those things. But the risk or the stress of having to provide all these different loan payments and credit card payments, that stress decreases so much that if you can do for a short period of time, sacrifice and work hard to get out of it, it really doesn't take as long as we might think that it would take, especially compared to what it would be if we just kept making those minimum payments. And for most people, they're not even going forward. They're making the minimum payments, but then they're charging more than the minimum payment on the card. So the balance is going up every month, even though they're making the payments. Or on student loans, some of these student loans are out of control, where the balance is so high that they're not even able to keep up with the interest. And so they're paying for 10, 20, 30 years on loans that the balance never goes down. And there's, you know, some really sad situations when it comes to that. But overall, for most people, if they could just cut their lifestyle and kind of bust it for a couple of years or less, they could see a huge swing that's going to pay dividends, I mean, literally for decades for a lot of us. And so there's just a lot of benefits in doing it that way and taking that risk out. All right. I skipped way forward in my notes. Some of that was not listed here. So let me figure out where I'm at. Okay. So I talked about, I think the first night, maybe it was the second night, about, how we don't use debt for anything. And so, somebody came up after me afterwards and asked me, like, how do you do, you know, if you don't use a credit card, how do you rent a car or stay in a hotel or stuff like that? I stayed in hotels. I've rented cars. My car, I told you guys in January, my engine went out. I had to get a new one. So I went to Hertz Rental Car in Lee Summit. I walked in with a debit card. I said, can I rent a car here with a debit card? They're like, yeah, no problem. We're going to hold like $500 extra in addition to the rental amount, until you bring the car back, just so you don't steal it or destroy it or something. And then once you turn it back in, you get the $500 back. I'm like, no problem. So I drove a rental car for a couple of weeks while I was looking for a car. So I've rented cars. I've traveled internationally. I've used my debit card in other countries. You know, it really, the protections and the way you use it is exactly the same on debit and credit. You still have no fraud liability. I use my card online all the time. I don't have any higher risk than anybody who uses a credit card. It's all the same. Some hotels will say, hey, we're going to charge you an extra $100 or hold an extra $100 until you check out. I've had that happen a few times. Some hotels don't even do that. But it's really not any more difficult. The main difference, so if I had a fraudulent charge on my debit card, that money comes out of my checking account and that money is gone from me for a day or two while the bank puts it back. So you can dispute it. The bank will put it back the same way they would on a credit card. The difference on a credit card, obviously, is usually that's taken care of before the statement even comes to you. And so it's not your money that's being taken. It's usually fixed, and it's the credit card company's money. That would be the only real difference in like how you live a life without a credit card. And as fast as things have gotten now, I mean, disputes, whenever I was working at the bank, sometimes it takes 7 to 10 business days for them to put the money back in your account. This was just within the last 5 or 6 years that it would be that long. Now it's, within 24 or 48 hours, the money's back in your account. While they dispute it, they temporarily give you the money back. So you're really not out the money for very long. And if you have a couple $100 cushion, like I was mentioning before, that's really not usually a huge impact to your life for that short period of time. The other thing that that I got to talking to that same person about was about 15 years ago when we first started this, we made about $3,000 a month at that time. And we had just started budgeting. We're trying to figure out how to do all this. And it was tax time. We filed our taxes. Our tax return was about $3,000, which is about what we made per month at that time. And so when we got our tax return back, we decided together that instead of putting this, into savings or spending it on something, let's leave that money in our checking account, because that's about 1 month of our income. And at the time I was working at the bank, which is a commission-based job, so it was hourly plus commission. So my income would fluctuate a decent amount from month to month. She was working as a server, so depending on how people were tipping, that, some nights were better than others. And so we didn't know exactly how much we would make on a given month. So it's hard to budget, if it could be we could have had a $500 or $600 swing from month to month. So it's hard to predict that ahead of time. So what we did was we said, okay, let's leave this money in our checking account. And that's one, we're going to pretend that we're 1 month ahead. Well, we didn't pretend we were. We actually were 1 month ahead on our budget. And so literally for 15 years, we've had a month of income sitting in our checking account ahead of time. So I can look and say, okay, what did we make in February? And so I can sit down at the beginning of March and say, okay, we know how much exactly to the dollar, how much we already made. And that's what we're going to spend in the month of March. And then, we're going to, all of March's money is going to come in. And then in April, we're going to spend March's money. So we've always been a month ahead. That is super valuable. If you can have a buffer like that, and I know it's not going to always work out and be super easy to save, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, depending on what your income is. It may not be easy to just get that. For us, it worked out that the tax return happened to be almost exactly what we made at the time. And we've just kind of carried that through. But if you can even just keep a buffer of, a few $100 in the checking account just to protect, so you're not going negative and just to kind of give you that cushion. But really, if you can get a month ahead, it is a huge help with budgeting, because you already know exactly how much you made. And even now, I'm on salary here, so my income doesn't fluctuate. But Brenda's does fluctuate. If she gets sent home early or she has to stay late, those hours can vary. And so it just helps to know what we're at before we actually get into the month. So the rest of the baby steps, 4, 5, and 6, we'll look at next week and the week after that. I have some more stuff to go over. Let me cut out what I can cut out here real fast. Let me see what we can get out of here. Okay. So the last, I'll skip a bunch of this and we'll wrap up with being out of debt or not having debt hanging over your head. For us, as a church, thinking of it from a spiritual perspective, not having debt allows us a lot of flexibility when it comes to serving the Lord. So when I was 19, I got the opportunity to do a short-term mission trip for 9 months to Albania. And I had a truck that had a loan on it. And so I had to leave it. My parents had to sell it while I was gone for me. But on a car, not as much maybe now, but on a car or a house or something like that, usually you can sell that for about what you owe on it. Or, on a house, you probably can sell it for more than what you owe on it. But that's not the case, with a student loan or a credit card debt or something where there's no collateral, right? You can't sell something to get out of that debt. You just have to be out of it. So for me with that situation, I was able to sell my truck. This was before I even knew anything about borrowing money or finances or anything. I was 19 years old. I didn't know anything about this, but it worked out that I didn't have a bunch of debt because I was so young. I was able to sell my truck, or my parents were, while I was gone. And I was able to just kind of pick up and leave for 9 months and go to the mission field. And there's been times over the last, 5 or 6 years where I've thought and prayed about, would God have me and my family to be a missionary somewhere, or, go out with a church plant or be a church planter. We're going to have our vision conference in a couple weeks. And it seems like around vision conference, that's our missions focus conference, missionaries come in, church planters come in. And they, you know, if you're here for those, they'll say something that's like, man, I should really consider being a missionary or a church planter, or I should consider doing this X, Y, and Z thing for the Lord. And, a lot of times debt gets in the way of us being able to do that. And, it can be really, sobering to think about, you know, mistakes that I've made in the past with money could impact the way that God can use me going forward. And so if God was to call me to be a missionary or a church planter or do something like that for him, and I have to say, well, I got, you know, $50,000 in credit card and student loan debt that I have to get paid off. Because if you're a missionary or a church planter, most of what your income becomes, especially if you're a missionary on the foreign mission field, most of those missionaries can't work, right? They can't hold a professional job in another country. And so all of the money that they have coming in is support from churches or individuals that comes in. And I don't know if I haven't really thought enough about it to think if I can definitively say it would be wrong. But I would feel a certain kind of way about taking some churches or some individuals giving to me as a missionary for me then to then be paying on student loan or credit card debt from my past, rather than what that person's actually giving that money towards is for me to be on the mission field, planting a church, you know, and you could still do those things as a missionary. So I'm not saying that it definitely is wrong, but I personally would feel a certain kind of, guilt about that, about like these people are supporting me on the mission field and I'm then still paying off, these debts that I've had. And so being debt free, at least with things that you can't sell. So like, you know, on a house, like I said, you can sell that, generally for more than what you owe on it. But for things that you can't sell, like credit cards and student loans and things like that, freeing yourself up from those things allows you to think more seriously about if God was to call me to be a missionary, I could pack up and leave. I could sell my house and I could get out of it at least what I owe on it and I could be gone. And I don't have to think about or dwell on credit card debt that's hanging over my head or those kinds of things. And so, again, this is not something that would like be maybe, applicable to just your average everyday person, your average American. But for people in this church, I mean, all of us are pretty, hopefully at least we get the seriousness of, you know, missions and church planting. And this church gives a lot to missions and you know, we talk a lot about discipleship and how important that is. But being freed up from debt actually allows you to do the things that God may call you to do. And maybe he never calls you to be a missionary. Maybe he never calls you to go out and be a church planter. But if he can't call you to do those things because you're tied down financially, that's a big deal. That's a big problem, big reason, a big incentive to get those things taken care of. Just as much as, you know, going through HBI and getting trained so you know doctrinally and theologically how you would plant a church or how you would be a missionary and the things that you would preach on and how to preach and all those things. I mean, not as important as that, but pretty close to as important as that is like being able to, if God says, hey, Luke, I want you and your family to go be a missionary. Okay, I'm out of debt. I can sell my house. I can go, you know, and just having the freedom to be able to do that, I think is like a really big incentive for me, for God to be able to use me. And so maybe that's an area that hits home for you. It does for me when I think about it. But maybe that's an area that you can think of as how can God use me? Am I limiting God, his ability to use me because of the financial position I put myself in? Because if we're talking about stewardship and we're talking about everything we have comes from God, do we think that God would provide us a $3,000 income per month and then that he would think that it's good stewardship of us to go spend $4,000 per month on things because he didn't supply us enough, you know? And so that's a thing to think about when you're budgeting and when you're thinking about your finances. Like if we're going to be good stewards of it, you know, God's going to provide what God's going to provide and we need to kind of live within those parameters. And if he calls us to be a missionary, calls us to plant a church, you know, likely your income's going to go down, right? As a missionary or a church planter. And so being able to live on less than you make is really a good skill to have so that God can use you going forward. So that's the last thing on the – so I put that on your homework. What baby step are you on? What steps can you take to move to the next one? And then are you in a financial position where God can use you, God can freely use you? It doesn't have to be missionary or church planter work also. I mean, you know, during the vision conference, we're going to take up a love offering on Wednesday night. We do that every year on the conference the last night. We do it on Bible conference too. You know, can you give extra because you don't have any debt hanging over your head? Yes. You know, in that example I gave, you're saving $700 a month. You know, that's some extra money that you can give towards, maybe a missionary or towards something that God would have you to give towards. And again, this class is not our way of sucking people in so we can tell you, yeah, give all your money to the church. But, when you have more to give, it's more likely that you're going to be able to give, you know, like people who are, super duper tight on their finances. It's difficult to have extra money to give, to something. But if you're, you know, wise steward and you're out of debt and you have the extra, the flexibility in your budget, that is something that you could potentially give extra for something. And so just some other things to think about. Does anybody have any questions before we wrap up? Yes, ma'am. I don't remember exactly what I said. So living on less than you make frees you up to do things for the Lord. Is that what I said exactly? I don't remember. It's on recording, so you can get it from there. Because I write down in my notes as if I was going to stand up here and read it, but I know I'm not going to do that. And so I don't have everything exactly in my notes how I'm going to say it. So sometimes it just comes out. So I don't remember exactly what I said on that one. All right, well, let's pray. If anybody has any questions, you can ask me afterwards or save them for next time. Dear Lord God, thank you again, God, for this evening. Thank you for the opportunity to get up here and talk about finances, God. And God, I just pray that the information that's being talked about, God, is something that's applicable, that all of us in this room, depending on no matter the stage that we're at and no matter the situation we find ourselves in, God, that we can, all of us can apply it. And so, God, I pray that all of us would be good stewards. I pray, God, that when you look at the way that we handle your money, God, that you would be pleased with that, that the things that we're doing with it are bringing honor and glory to you, God. And I ask also, God, that if we're not, if we find ourselves in debt or we find ourselves in a position where maybe we haven't made wise decisions in the past, God, I pray that you'd help us to know that doesn't define us going forward, God. That doesn't mean that you can't use us. That doesn't mean that we're bad people, God, but that you would just help us to be intentional and be wise stewards moving forward. And, God, that you would just supernaturally bless the things that we do have, God, and just help us to be good stewards going forward. And so I just ask all these things in your name. Amen.